And it's the 26th of May, and this is Rabbi Manning Shira.
Do you want to press pause for now, or do you want to? Because we're not starting for another 5 minutes, so you're going to get 5 minutes of silence or chatting. Okay. Good morning to everybody. Welcome to the OU Centre, although maybe you should be welcoming me, because you're probably regulars and I'm not. It's really very nice to be teaching here, and we have ahead of us, I hope, quite an interesting roller coaster ride through some of the more interesting areas of the Torah text and transmission, meaning trying to get a grip on some of the fundamentals about where the halakhic system, the hashkafic system comes from. Actually, it's a good reminder. I've got to turn my phone off as well. So that's a good thing to do right now.
And then,
so I turned it on. So we're rolling. I'm not entirely sure how many sessions we have this summer. We have at least, Be'ezrat Hashem, 6 or 7, maybe a little bit more. Once we get the schedule clear for July and August, then maybe we'll even have a few more. And that'll really control how much we're able to get through. This kind of topic, you can really go on forever and ever. If you're interested in further study on the matter, this is something that I'm particularly interested in. And I have a website which there is a reference to at the top of the sheet, rabbimanning.com. And I have various different lengths of series on this. I have a 4-part crash course. On the website I have a 15-part course and I have a 60-part course, and quite frankly you can go on, you could have a 150-part course if you have the time and energy, but we don't have that luxury. So what we're going to do is we're going to see today a starting issue, which is Sinai and the Torah Shebichtav, try and understand really what's going on at Har Sinai in terms of the written Torah. Next time I want to go into a parallel discussion about the oral Torah at Sinai, and then we'll move forward from there, and once it becomes clear how many sessions we have, then we'll know how much we're able to do on this. Okay, everybody should have a sheet. Please do come in. If there's a no problem. They're just finishing up the other class. So let me just pause this. There. Okay, let's make a start. So, what happened at Har Sinai? Very appropriate for Shavuot. There are a number of different approaches to take up to this, and we are looking here today at the issue of Torah Shebichtav. Yep, I pressed it. We're on. We're good. The statement that I started the sheet with is a very famous one, but it's not clear exactly what this means. Ani ma'amin be'emuna shelema, one of the Ani ma'amins, in fact number 8. The Ani ma'amins were not actually written by the Rambam. The Rambam wrote the 13 Ikrei Ha'emuna, but there were at least 100 poems written over the next 300 or 400 years of people who were so excited by the 13 principles of faith that they wrote little summaries of them, like Yigdal is when we sing in Shul and the Ani Ma'amin. So we don't know who wrote the Ani Ma'amin, and there are actually slightly different versions of them. The Sephardim, if you look in the Sephardis, did have a slightly different Ani Ma'amin to the Ashkenazim, specifically on this one, which makes a difference. But let's have a look at number 1. Ani Ma'amin Be'emunah Shelema Shekala Treira Hamatsuya Atabi Adenu, the entire Torah that we have in our hands today, Hi Hanasuna LaMoshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom, that is the Torah which was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. What does that mean, that the entire Torah we have today is the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu? The entire halakhic system was given to Moshe Rabbeinu? Every sefer that's on the shelf? So is this Torah Shebichtav? Okay, so let's limit it. Please do come in. There are some seats over here. I hope so, yes. So as the lady over here said, Torah Shebichtav. At least we can say Torah Shebichtav. But can we? How does that work? When was the Torah Shebichtav given? And most people seem to work under a rather sort of simplified understanding that somehow Moshe Rabbeinu walked down the mountain with a chumash under his arm. And we'll see that's not the case. That is not true according to any opinion. We'll see today what exactly we do understand to be the situation. There are 3 critical questions that I want to ask. And I want to divide them up into separate issues so that we get clarity on them. The first one is, when was the Chumash given to Moshe? When was the Chumash given by God to Moshe? Question number 1. Question number 2, when was that Chumash transmitted by Moshe to the Jewish people? And question number 3, when was the whole thing written down? And we'll see that these are not just historical questions. These really are questions that Chazal are troubled by and deal with, because they go to the root of how we are meant to read the Chumash. It's not just an inquiry as to what happened. I don't really care. Why do I care what happened 3,000 years ago? I care because it affects the way I look at the Chumash and understand the Chumash and relate to it today. So again, three questions. When was the Chumash given to Moshe? Number two, when did Moshe transmit that to the people? And number three, when was it written down into the form of the Chumash that we have today? And we'll see each of those questions dealt with separately. Let's start with the first one. When was the Chumash given to Moshe? And here we need to introduce a fundamental machloket between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Have a look at number four, please. The Gemara in Chagiga says the following. Rabbi Shmuel Oimer, Klalos Nemru B'Sinai. Rabbi Shmuel's position is that on Sinai we got the Klalos, general principles, okay? Upratos, but the specifics, Ba'Ohel Moed, they came in the Ohel Moed. Now, where was the Ohel Moed? Everywhere, all over the place. But where did the Ohel Moed start? At Sinai. At Sinai, okay? But not the same Sinai that happened at the very beginning, at Shavuos, but the Sinai that continues after, we'll see in the Ramban, after Yom Kippur time. So Rabbi Shmuel says, when Moshe Rabbeinu had the, whatever experience he had at Shavuos on Har Sinai, that was a general principles experience, not specifics. The specifics all followed later on. Rabbi Akiva, I know, the Rabbi Akiva says, no. Klalos uprafos nemru b'Sinai, the klalim and the pratim, everything, all the specifics were given at Sinai. V'nishnu ba'ohel moed, and they were repeated for a second time in the ohel moed. V'nishdalshu ba'arvas moav, and they were repeated a third time in the arvas moav. Where is the arvas moav? The very final stage, which we see in Sefer Dvarim, before the Jewish people cross at the end of Moshe's life, before they come into Eretz Yisrael. Where are they getting their approaches from? Well, Rabbi Shmuel is coming out of the, seems like, the pshat in the Chumash. Take the mitzvah of Shemitah, for example. The mitzvah of Shemitah appears in Parshas Mishpatim in very abbreviated form. It just says, basically, every 7 years you keep a Shemitah, don't plant, and that's about it. Only later do we see in Parshas Bahar, which we just read a couple of weeks ago in Sefer Vayikra, all the details of Shemitah, Sheshishamim, Tazukol, etc. And you will do the pruning and this and that, but the seventh year you won't. Only in the Parshas Bahar do we see the specifics coming in. So Rabbi Shmuel says, yes, you see, Parshas Mishpatim is the Klalim, Parshas Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra is the details. Says Rabbi Kiva, no. The whole point is it says in Bahar there, Bahar Sinai, that the details, even in Sefer Vayikra, were given on Har Sinai. We'll see that in a minute. And therefore, rooted in this mitzvah of Sinai, of Shemitah, is a machlokas, as I said, between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. You look how Rashi understands the machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, number 5, you'll see a few interesting details. So first in Rabbi Shmuel Shita, have a look in number 5 in Rashi. Says Rashi, Harbe Dvarim Nemru Stumim Basinai. According to Rabbi Shmuel, many things were given stumim on Har Sinai, meaning unclear. Shaloi nitparshu kol tzarkan, they weren't fully elucidated. Or pir shaloi, but they were explained to him. Who's him?
Moshe.
To Moshe. La'achar shehukim ha-mishkan, only afterwards when they put up the mishkan, ba'ohel moed. That's Rabbi Shmuel's shita. Okay. Uprafis ba'ohel moed. Says Rabbi Yishmael in the next line of Rashi, Mishihukam HaMishkan, once the Mishkan was up and running, the Dibur Amoy, the Ala Kapores, and Moshe was communicated to over the Kapores, Shampirish Loi HaKosov, that's where God gave him all the explanations. We don't know how God spoke to Moshe. The Rambam deals with this in Morin Avuchim. We use the word Dibur, because that's the best we can do in terms of communication. But it wasn't speech in the way that I'm speaking to you. There was no airwaves going through and sounds going into Moshe Rabbeinu's ears. The whole thing was coming into his head through a process of nevuah, which we call dibur, but it wasn't really dibur. The Rambam says we don't really have a word to describe what it was because we're not on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Today I suppose we could use uploading information, or if you can imagine a USB port, you know, the back of his head or whatever it was. In fact, there's a very interesting, there's a Maharshal, Rav Shlomo Luria, already in the 16th century, says, what does it mean when it says that they saw the sounds at Har Sinai? He said already 500, 400 years ago. He says these weren't sounds, the kolot are actually the information transfer, the deot, coming down to them at Har Sinai. And of course they saw them in the sense that they were picking up the wavelengths and they were understanding what's going on. We have all sorts of words today in the 21st century that we could actually use more than the Rambam had in the 12th century to understand information transfer. The whole of the internet is now in this room going through our bodies at this very minute. The idea is actually quite mind-blowing if you think about it. But we somehow relate to that a little bit better. But whatever it was, Hashem communicated those according to Rabbi Shmuel, first of all in general terms at Sinai, and then in specific terms afterwards. However, Rabbi Akiva says no. They were given all at Sinai, all the details. Venishnu, look in Rashi number 5. Pam Shinit, they were given a second time. Chol Mashenem Akam, Nem Akam. Whatever Moshe got on Sinai, he got again in the Ohel Moed. The Afal Pisha Loi Nichtab, even though it wasn't written down yet, which we'll get to, of course, that's our third question. When was it written down? But everybody agrees it wasn't written down yet. V'nishdal Shub Arvas Moed, and it was given a third time in Arvas Moed, says Rashi, Mipi Moshe Li Yisrael. Oh, now we're getting an idea that there's a certain transmission to the Jewish people now. Maybe that didn't happen quite yet. Shememad, it says, and he brings the Pasuk at the beginning of Dvarim as to how he communicated. So this is the first step if the construction in terms of the structure that we need to understand. There is this fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, how the Torah was transmitted to Moshe. Rabbi Akiva seems to be the opinion that most people follow. We'll see that in Rashi right now. We'll see it later on in the Chazon Ish as well. But at the end of the day, Rabbi Shmuel is taking a slightly different approach, which we'll see is quite important in terms of how the Chumash developed over the 40 years in the Midbar. It wasn't all given at once. And we'll see why that becomes important in the way that we understand mitzvahs as we go along. Bahar, which I mentioned before in number 6, says the following, V'idabe Hashem al Moshe Bahar Sinai Leimor. It's when you come to the land, etc. Says Rashi, the famous words of Rashi. What's it got to do with Har Sinai? Har Sinai is already back in Parshas Mishpatim. We're already at the end of Vayikra. Why are we talking about Har Sinai? The Haloi Kol Mitzvah's name was Sinai. Is anything special about this mitzvah which was given on Sinai in a way that the others weren't? Ella, and he quotes Rabbi Akiva's opinion, Mashmitah Nemru Klaloi Sehu Upratoi Sehu Vidiknu Keh Sinai. Just like this mitzvah of Shmita is being singled out to teach you that all the details, not just the principles, as Rabbi Shmuel would say, but even the details were given on Sinai, so too they were all given in their details and their principles on Sinai. He quotes Teres Kohanim, which is the view that seems to be followed by Rabbi Kiva and followed by Rashi as well. And in fact, this idea that the Torah was given and repeated and said over a third time, we see this pattern very clearly in the Chumash. Turn over to page number 2 and you'll see a little diagram that my daughter Yael prepared, which I think would have been beyond my capabilities in terms of technology, but she just did it in about 5 minutes, which is a small graph showing you the way that the mitzvahs were given. According to the Sefer HaChinuch, you'll see the 613 mitzvahs clearly, and everybody agrees with this basic pattern, they come in three peaks. This thing that looks like an electrocardiograph here is in fact the heartbeat of the Torah through the Chumash, and you'll see that nothing much happens in Bereishis. A couple of mitzvahs here, there, Bris Milah, Gilan Asher, and then all of a sudden at the beginning of Shemot you'll see a very large peak. That is, of course, is Parshat Mishpatim. That is what we call Sinai. Then things calm down a little bit, and then in the middle of Vayikra, Parshas Emor, there is a very large peak, Kedoshim, etc., etc., Achrei Mos. There is a large peak of mitzvahs. Then things calm down a little bit, not many things happen in Bamidbar, and then in the middle of Dvarim, there's an even bigger peak. You actually see that these three peaks get bigger and bigger. The mitzvah download gets greater on each one, and the final one comes in the middle of Sefer Dvarim in Parshas Re'eh and Ekev and Kisese, which is of course the final, if you like, download. And we have to understand, why is the Torah structured in this way? Why are there really three Torahs? There's Torah A, Torah B, and Torah C. Why does it happen that way? Now, according to Rabbi Ishmael, it happens that way because we need more explanation as we go along. Only the basics were given at the beginning, and as the Jewish people go through the desert, more details are given until eventually at the end of 40 years they have a full picture. But according to Rabbi Akiva, why is it this way? Why was the Torah given once, and then given again, and then given a third time? Why did it have to be this way? And if you look in the Ramban on Bahar picks this up and says a very fundamental idea which we need to understand properly. Look at number 7 if you have the sheet. If you don't, it's Perush Shabbat Peh. That's also good, even though we're talking about Perush Bechtav. Next week's Perush Shabbat Peh. Have a look at number 7. Lefi Da'ati, according to my view, says the Ramban, Ki Nichtava Kan Beseda Nachon. Everything is written here in the correct order. The Ramban, you should know, is very unhappy at saying Ein Mukdum Umukhum V'Torah. The idea that the Torah is not presented chronologically. Rashi has much less of a problem with defaulting to that idea. Look, the Torah is in thematic order. It doesn't have to be in chronological order. Obviously, there is a broad chronological order to the Torah. Everyone agrees that. It starts with the word Breshit, which seems pretty chronological, and it ends at the end of Moshe's life. But Rashi says, look, at the end of the day, if there is a conflict in the parashas, it's probable that they're not in chronological order. And he says that in many cases. For example, he talks about Mishpatim. If you look in the Parshas Yisro, the Torah is given in Parshas Yisro. The Ten Commandments happen there. And then we have all of the mitzvot in Parshat Mishpatim. And at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, there is another account of the giving of the Torah. The one at the end of Parshat Mishpatim is where Moshe Rabbeinu puts together the 12 pillars. That's the hidden one. That's the one that people always forget. Everyone knows the one in Parshas Yisro. We read it on Shavuot morning. But the one at the end of Parshas Mishpatim is the dusty corner people forget. That's where he dips into the blood and he sprinkles it on all the people. That's where they say Na'aseh V'Nishma. They don't say Na'aseh V'Nishma in Parshas Yisro. They just say Na'aseh. Okay, but later they say Na'aseh V'Nishma. What is the order of these events? So Rashi there says, no, Ein Mukdum Umukhum V'Torah, that's not the order in which it happened. Actually, all the stuff at the end of Mishpatim happened at the beginning as part of giving the Torah, and then later all the halachot in Parshat Mishpatim were given later after Yom Kippur, etc. The Ramban says, no. The Ramban does not want to rely on the principle of Ein Mukdum Umukhum V'Torah unless he absolutely has to. For example, in this week's parasha, in Bamidbar. Bamidbar starts on the first day of the second month. And then Naso, or the next parasha, we see the first day of the first month. So there's nothing to talk about. Clearly, things are out of order. But here he says, no, not necessarily. The way it works is the following, says the Ramban. First of all, they had the giving of the Torah in Parashat Yisro. Then all of the mitzvot that were the specifics that were given in Parshat Mishpatim were related and taught to the people, and after they heard all those mitzvot, they did what's called the brit. They made a brit on all these mitzvot after Har Sinai, after a few days, whatever, afterwards. And that was what happens at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, which is like a confirmation of the acceptance of the Torah, which is not the way that Rashi reads it and not the way that most people usually think about it. See what he says inside here, number 7. Well, lefi dati, in my view, ki nichtava kan beseder nachon. Everything is written in the appropriate order. Ki perush b'har Sinai, when it says in Bahar that the mitzvahs of Shemitah were given on Har Sinai, ba'aloto sham lekabel luchot shniot. Says, don't make the mistake of thinking that Har Sinai was just the first part. There were two different stages to Har Sinai. There was the first luchot that Moshe received, and then eventually became broken on Shavuot Tammuz. And there was the second Luchot, which still happened at Har Sinai, which were of course given on Yom Kippur. And the Ohel Moed started in Har Sinai, at Har Sinai as well. Ubir Ha'inyan, and this is how to explain. Ki betchila tarba'im yom rishonim, at the beginning of the first 40 days, shel luchos harishonim, this is the first luchos, cast of Moshe b'sefer habris. Moshe wrote down the sefer habris. It called Divrei Hashem. Bet Kol HaMishpatim. Moshe wrote down all of the Mishpatim, Hanei Marim Sham, which are written in the Pasha. V'yizrok Dam HaBrit Al Ha'am. And he threw and he sprinkled the blood onto the people. U'kashechatu. But then when they sinned, Be'egel with the Cheta Egel, V'nishtabru HaLuchos, then the Luchos were smashed. Ki'ilu Nitbat LaHaBrit Ahi. That Brit was cancelled. Plan A was over. Etzal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at least as far as Hashem's concerned. When Hashem was appeased, the whole, if you remember the whole Seder, the Moshe Rabbeinu goes 40 days from Shavuos to Shavuot of Tammuz, and then they're smashed, and then there's 40 days from the 17th of Tammuz up until Rosh Chodesh Elul, and on Rosh Chodesh Elul Hashem says, okay, we're not going to destroy the people, let's start again. And from Rosh Chodesh Elul through till Yom Kippur, you have the second Luchos, and then eventually we get the second Luchos. When Hashem agrees to give the Luchos Shniyos, Sivau b'Brit Chadasha. There's a Brit Chadasha. There's a whole new Torah. Shneimar, Hini Anuchi Koret Brit. He brings the pasuk there. The Hechzi Shama Mitzvah Tachamuro Shneimar Baseda Ba'Elo Mishpatim. He goes over again the main mitzvahs that we had in Mishpatim, because the whole of the first Torah is not being abandoned, it's just being reiterated. But Brit Rishana, the things we had in the first Brit. But Amon, then he says, Ksav l'chayis ha-dvarim ha'eile, ki al-pi ha-dvarim ha'eile, karte yitzcha Brit ve'et Yisrael. This is the new Brit I'm making, the Brit Shnia. But with this new covenant, says the Ramban, Hashem wants you to be a little bit stricter. The Brit Hazot, Hashemit, Shetia aleihem ba'alot u'beklalot. That it comes together with a punch at the end. It comes together with what we call the Tochacha. What is the Tochacha? The Tochacha is, this time, don't mess it up. This time, don't mess it up. U'shetia kirishona. It's going to be like, otherwise, like the first one. I call a mitzvah harishonos, but I call a mishpatim. K'moshen nam a brit harishona et kol dibrei Hashem et kol a mishpatim. Ulufika. Therefore, says the Ramban, Amar b'kan b'sof atochachot. Therefore, at the end of Ayikra, we have the tochachot. Eila hachukim. It says these are the chukim v'hamishpatim v'hatorot asher nasan Hashem beino or bein bnei Israel behar Sinai, not behar Sinai. The original Har Sinai, that was the Brit Rishonah, that got messed up and smashed already at the Chet Ha'Egel. But the Brit Shnia, which also happened at Har Sinai. B'hu romez ha'kol ha'mitzvot ha'mishpatim she'nemru b'Brit Harishonah v'seder v'el mishpatim she'hayu kulam b'Brit Hazot. All of the first ones were repeated, but again with a punch at the end. And then he says an interesting thing here. Look at these last two lines, the second paragraph in the Ramban carefully. V'hineh, he says, v'seifah ha'Brit Harishon nema ha'shvi'it b'chlal. In the first Brit, Shemitah was given in Bichlal, in outline. K'moshu hizkarti shenema v'hashvi'it tishmatena unatashta. Just a general presentation of Shemitah. V'asa, but now, v'brit hazot, in the second Brit, hashenit, nema v'prateha v'dikdukeha v'onashah. It's given with more details. Now, one second. Is this Rabbi Akiva or is this Rabbi Yishmael? It sounds like Rabbi Yishmael. It sounds more like Rabbi Yishmael. Meaning, the Ramban is bringing together a little bit Rabbi Yekiva and Rabbi Yishmael and saying the following. The Torah was of course given in the Brit Rishonah, but it had to be repeated in the Brit Shniah, and it had to be given with a slightly different angle, because the people were different people. There had to be more detail. And this is the thing that we're going to pick up in a minute in the Sforno, which is fascinating. Because they'd done the Chet Ha'Egel, and Plan A won't work anymore. Think about this. The truth is, it's not even Plan A, B, and C. We're already on Plan G, F, and G, H, and I. Because Plan A was Adam and Chava in Gan Eden. Okay, that didn't work. Scratch that. So Plan B was Noach and okay, so scratch that. That didn't work either. So Plan C was Avram Avinu, etc. And then they ended up going down to Mitzrayim. Fine. So we're already, I don't know which plan we're already on, but we're way down the line. So the plan that we have, the initial plan for the Jewish people, is Parshat Mishpatim, Sefer Shmos. There may never have been a Sefer Vayikra, says the Ramban. And we'll see in the Sforno, he says that explicitly. Sefer Vayikra was not on the agenda at the beginning. What was on the agenda was Sefer Shmot, Parshas Mishpatim, the mitzvahs that were given there to the generation pre-Egel. Then they messed up. They did the Chet Ha'Egel, and God says, that's it. The Brit Rishonah is over. It won't work that way anymore. And Moshe says, but there must be a second chance. And God says, okay. And there's the whole Yud Gimel Midas Arachamim, Hashem Hashem, Kel Rachum Vachanon, etc., etc. Then there's a Brit Shniah, and now we have to have Sefer Vayikra. Okay, Sefer Vayikra, Sefer Bamidbar, but how long were we meant to be in the desert in the Brit Shniah?
Are you implying that the Korbanos were a second thought?
Well, get to that in a second. I'm not implying that. I'm saying it explicitly. We'll see. The Sforno says this clearly. They were meant to be in the desert for a few days, a few weeks, as long as it takes. And of course, they got the Sefer Vayikra with the punch at the end, with the Tochacha, saying, this time, you mustn't mess it up. And did they mess it up?
Yes.
Yes, when? The Chet HaMeraglim. So when we hit the end of Sefer Bamidbar, they ignored the Tochacha. They messed up again with the Sefer, and this time in a much bigger way, in the sense that they rejected Eretz Yisrael as well. Okay? And therefore, there was no hope for this generation. This generation are over, they're going to die in the desert, as we all know, and the next generation is going to go into Eretz Yisrael, but they are now going to receive Plan C, which is Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim is the next main download of mitzvot that you see in the third peak, But this time it comes not just with a tochacha at the end, but with a very, very big tochacha at the end. The tochacha at the end of Vayikra is fairly muted. It's, don't do this, it's going to be bad for you, but at the end of the day, it was a chartier, it's briti, Abraham, it's briti, Yaakov, etc., etc. The tochacha at the end of Varim is just endless. It's endless. And there's no good news. There's no good news at the end. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. Because this time the tochacha is, look, you've messed up once, you've messed up twice, you ain't getting a third chance. It's not happening that way. This is your final Torah. If you mess this one up, there is no other Torah. And that's sacred Devarim. Now, what are the implications for that in terms of the mitzvahs generally? Have a look at this amazing Sephorno in number 8. Says the Sephorno, Zot Achaya Asher Tochlu. Now, the lady over here asked about Korbanot. You can ask the same thing about many mitzvahs that we only see for the first time in Sefer Vayikra, such as Kashrut. There is no inkling of Kashrut in Sefer Shemot. We have Basar V'Chalav, and we have the concept of a musical accompaniment, okay. We have the concept of a trefa, an animal that is torn in the field, but there's no indication that we cannot eat certain animals. There's no indication of that at all. There are a number of arayot that only appear for the first time in, say, the Vayikra. For example, some of the arayot, some of the prohibited marriages are already Sheva Mitzvahs, but they know. Okay, fine, so that is already given. But for example, Nida, the concept of Tarat HaMishpacha, only appears in Sefer Vayikra. So look at what the Sephorno says. Zot hachaya asher tochlu. These are the animals which you can eat. Hine, says the Sephorno. This is at the beginning of Parshas, beginning in Shmini, in the middle of Shmini in chapter 11 of Vayikra. Hine, achashid naslu Yisrael et eida. Okay, haruchani. After the Jewish people had to remove their jewelry, as it were, their spiritual jewelry, shekanu b'matan Torah, which they received on matan Torah, the crowns of Nasa and Nishma that the Midrashim talk about, and they were worthy of having the Shechina rest on them with no intermediary. That was the level of Har Sinai. She'amru b'chol ha'makom, when it says b'chol ha'makom asher askir shmi, at the end of Parshat Yisro, God says anywhere my name is mentioned, avo elecho v'raktikha, I'll come to you anywhere, any place, any time. You don't need any special mishkan, you don't need anything, you just need to call into my name, out of my name. Those very, very important words. Just as one day it will be again in the future. We often talk about going back to the level of Chetah Egel, before Chetah Egel. The idea of Mashiach, when Mashiach comes, we'll go back to the level of before Chetah Egel. But now, Mas Hakel Yisbarach Achakach Mihashroit Od Shechinato. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no way, you can't have my Shechina, Beinehem Klal, at all. In Parshas Kisisa, he says, I'm not going to come up with you. Moshe does achieve with his tefillah eize tikkun, some level of tikkun. Why? What's that tikkun? Shetishre hashchina v'socham be'emtzaut mishkan. They can at least have the mishkan. He's going with the shita that the mishkan is b'di'evet. Like the Rambam says, the korbanos were b'di'evet. They weren't meant to be korbanos. They only are korbanos because we showed that we weren't able to serve Hashem in a direct way. The kelav, mashatav, zvachav, all the korbanos, etc. Add shesigur zachu el, until they eventually got the yarp fight Hashem el kol ha'am. The covet of Hashem appeared on the people in Parsha Shmini, and they actually got the Shechina back to some degree. And they have the fire coming down from heaven. Bechein, therefore, he says, Rala takein mezagam, the mezeg, whatever that means, their constitution had to now be fixed up post ego, he says. Sheyidiye muchan laor boorachaim hanitchim, so that he would be once again able to take this the light of ruchaniut. V'ze b'tikun hamizonot, that's all it. They have to therefore have tikkunim in what they could eat and who they could marry and their marital relations. The asaret ha-machalim, ha-matanim. Now he says you can't eat these foods. Matanim tanefesh, which corrupt the soul. But midot, muskalot, and ideas, etc. The foods have an effect on us. Kusha amru al-tashaktu es-machshaseichem, v'kadishtem, v'hisim kadoshim. All these ideas of kedusha are all post-egel, says the Sforno. The asar ha-nida. And he also prohibits nida. The hazava. the Hayoledet, all of these new prohibitions that we see in Sefer Vayikra, Lakadish Azazera, in order to sanctify the children, Latara Mikola Tumah, etc. The Hiskeloshen Tumah, we see the idea of Tumah, Benabela, etc. The Sforno actually is packing a radical punch, because what's he saying? He's saying that the Torah that we got in Vayikra was a plan B Torah, like we've seen intimated in the Vayikra, in the Ramban, sorry, and we wouldn't have had that Torah had we not messed up at the Egel. And he says explicitly, one day when we go back onto the level of pre-Egel, we won't have that Torah again. And that is a very radical comment. Because it's that approach, a more mystical approach, that the Rambam, Maimonides, fights tooth and nail against when he writes time and time again, and he includes as one of his Ikrim, the Torah will never, ever, ever, ever change in the future. There will never be a Torah Chadashah. There will never be a new Brit. And of course, part of that is a polemic against Christianity as well. But it's also against Jewish mysticism, which intimated, and eventually when we had Shabtai Tzvi, explicitly says that there will be a Torah Chadashah. There is a Midrash that says, just, even though we say Matir Asurim, one day, that will become Matir Isurim. The God will now release Isurim. That's a Midrash. That's not Shabtai Tzvi that invented that. He brought it into reality where he said there's now going to be public violation of mitzvot, because he said, I am the Mashiach. The Asid Lavo has now come. And people really went for this big time. If you've studied the history of Shabtai Tzvi and in the mid-17th century, most of the Jewish world were convinced that he was the real deal, including many of the Gedolim of the generation. Not everybody, but many of them. People were selling their houses. People were turning around to their non-Jewish neighbors. Who, they don't forget, they'd just gone through Tach V'Tach. They'd just gone through the Chernyaki massacres in 1648, 1649. And now they turn around to their neighbors and said, ha-ha, the last laugh is on you. I need the mic.
There won't be a speaker outside. There are people sitting outside this way.
I feel as though I should sing you a song now. Is that easier? Is that too loud now? Did you need it before? Did you need it? I don't mind. If I put the microphone here, it'll pick up a little bit what it picks up.
We wouldn't need it.
Okay. You need it? Okay, fine. Okay, well, I won't sing you a song, but... maybe at the end. No, I won't. This is very critical, because what drove Shabtai Tzvi to this, and what committed people to the ideas that he was talking about, was exactly this concept. That the Torah was originally A, and then became B, and then will once again go back to being A. And as I said, the Rambam and the rationalist schools completely oppose this on every level. He said, no, there will never be another Torah. Okay, some halachot will change, because once we have a Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin can then reopen the Shas, can reanalyze some of the halachas that Chazal said. Until we have a Sanhedrin, we cannot do that. But that's all within the system. The system of Sanhedrin is part of the system of halacha we have. We just don't happen to have a Sanhedrin today because of the galus. Once we have one, then we can reanalyze. But that's all within the system. But this is going beyond the system. The Rambam says that even when Tchiyas HaMeisim comes, there will not be a new Torah. There will be the same Torah. Certainly when Mashiach comes, Mashiach is a natural phenomenon for the Rambam. This is very well known. And certainly does not involve any kind of change of halakha. And therefore, already in these first few sources, you see that understanding how the Torah was given, it says the Torah Shebichtav Tach, has a critical implication to how we understand Torah to become in the future, and to the way we relate to Messianism, which has affected Jewish history very significantly up until this day. And today, even on a certain level, the Reform Movement, which is of course not coming directly from the sources in this way, but it's saying the same kind of idea. We've reached the 19th century, this is the Age of Enlightenment, this is now a new world. We don't know what it felt like in the 19th century. We have the benefit of the 20th century as the prism through which we view history. And the optimism that people felt in the 19th century, we now look back on as something of a naivety, but they didn't feel that then. They really felt, look, the ghettos have been broken open, the Jews are now emancipated, this is a new age, and a new age calls for a Torah Chadashah. And therefore the remote reform movement said that the Torah Chadashah that we're introducing is A, B, and C. Now again, it may not have been coming exactly from the source, but it's coming from the same idea. Therefore, this was a critical theme that came up again and again, and it comes out from an understanding of how Torah was given. Okay, fine. So we see, according to at least the Ramban, plan A, plan B, plan C, this is how the Torah was given. But by the end of the Torah, we had everything. By the end of the 40 years, clearly Moshe Rabbeinu was meant to receive everything. So this raises an interesting question, which is, so why did he not know the answer to certain questions? We see four specific questions that are raised in the Chumash. People that come up to him and ask what to do, and he doesn't know the answer. What are those four areas? Pesach Sheni, the Benot Lokad, the Makosha Shishim, and there's always one fourth one people forget. It's not always this one that people forget, but there's always a fourth one. It's the Makalel, the man who comes out and he curses HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he doesn't know what to do with him. Fine, four occasions. Now, if you go with Rabbi Ishmael's opinion, which is that the Torah was given originally in outline and only later is elucidated, okay, so he didn't yet know those particular issues.
Isn't it going to go in depth to this position by the house tonight? Already been given. It's not a situation
that
you needed to.
So then you get into an interesting question as to Ein Mukdam Amucha B'Torah. When did any of these things happen? Because it may well be, in fact, that the story of the Makoshish Eitzim and the Makalel and even Pesach Sheni happened much earlier, even though they only appear later in Bamidbar, which we'll talk about later in terms of the writing of the Torah very soon. But certainly according to Rabbi Akiva, why did Moshe not know the answer to these questions? Didn't he get everything on Har Sinai? So the Maharal asked that question and gives an answer which is actually going to be an introduction to next week's year, although we haven't finished yet, don't worry, can't back away yet, we have 20 minutes left to go, but I want to give you this teaser for next week in the following way. Have a look please on the top of page 3 at the Maharal of Prague. He says, V'tema, I'm astounded, he says, Kevan the Kaimalan, since we rule, which is an interesting expression, Kaimalan, the Chol HaTorah Nitna Mehar Sinai, the whole Torah was given on Har Sinai, Klaloiseha, Pratoiseha, V'dikdukeha, which is Rabbi Akiva's Shita, and he seems to rule like Rabbi Akiva. Does he have to rule? Is this a halachic issue? Is this a hashkafic issue? Maybe this flags up an even bigger topic, which we're not going to talk about, I think, on this course, which is there such a thing as a sack in hashkafic issues, or not? Which is fundamentally one of the biggest machlekot between the Haredi and the non-Haredi world in the 21st century. Whereas the Haredi world says there is such a thing as a psak in hashkafa, not just in halakha, and if we don't paskin like these opinions, you can't go back to the Rambam or whoever it is and say, I think that the Rambam's right. Whereas the non-Haredi world takes the view largely that there is no psak in hashkafa, and therefore even if these opinions are the current ones, you can go back to earlier opinions in Hashkafa and say these appeal more to us today, etc. This is a very big topic, which is not for now, and there are sources to be brought on both sides of the equation, for sure. But the Maharal anyway says we pass in like Rabbi Akiva on this issue. In Ken, therefore, if that's the case, Lama lo yada Moshe Rabbeinu ala mashalam, I see the end of the sheet, Din, why did he not know Din Sheyada Noisan? Why, he's talking here about the Makalo. But the same is true of all the four cases. Why did he not know if he got them on Sinai? And look at what he says. For you alone, mate, it seems to me you have to say the following. Even though, yes, Moshe Rabbeinu received on Sinai all of the details, the details weren't given to him explicitly. They were given so that he could learn them out through Hekesh, which is one of the Torah Shebaal Peh systems, or Mibinyan Av, which is also a Torah Shebaal Peh system. You can learn out, the rabbis learn out certain details, or Midrashatma, or from some level of Drash. But there was Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't given it on a plate. He was given it as a system that he had to work out for himself during those 40 years. And on those few issues that he couldn't work out, he had to be told explicitly. Now, according to the Maharal, what's happening with Rabbi Akiva? This idea that we have that Moshe Rabbeinu was given every single detail, even the Torah Shebichtav on Har Sinai, says the Maharal, no, actually that's not how it works. What Rabbi Akiva means is that Moshe Rabbeinu was given the ability to work everything out. If he didn't work it out, okay, so he was told. But that opens it up to a whole new analysis. What does it mean? What was the nature of Torah Shebichtav during the 40 years in the desert? Okay, we'll soon see, by the end of Moshe's life, it was written down, it was crystallized, it was clear. But during those 40 years, what was it? Was it written? Was it oral? How was it written? How was it oral? It's a very interesting analysis, which the Maharal is opening up for us, and we will get back to that, Bezrat Hashem, next Tuesday, when we talk further about that issue. But, so we've seen sources so far as to how was the Chumash communicated to Moshe. And we've seen different opinions, Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, and even in Rabbi Akiva's opinion, it's not so straightforward. There was the Brit Rishonah, the Brit Shniyah, etc. Now, I want to move to the second question, which is, how was the Torah communicated by Moshe to the people? And the answer is, on an as-needs basis. Look at number 10. The Gemara in Gittin says, Da'ama Rabbi Levi, Shmona Parshiyot Nemru B'yom Shehukom Bo HaMishkan. Actually, 8 parshas were given over to the people, given on the day that the Mishkan was created, was erected, because they needed them there. The Elohim, these are they. And he goes through a list. Parshat Kohanim, the Parshat of the Kohanim, which only comes later in Parshat Emor, Parshat Leviim, Parshat Tameim, Parshat Shiluach Tameim, when they sent out the Tameim from the camp, which only comes, we only see that in Bamidbar, okay? Parshat Achreimot, Parshat Shisuyayim, which is in Shmini, Parshat Neirot, Parshat Para Aduma. Now, Para Aduma? Where's Parah Aduma? Parshat Chukah, that's the very end of Bimibor almost, just before the 40 years where they all die out. Says the Gemara in Gittin, actually no, it may appear in the written Torah over there, but it was given over to the people. They needed Parshat Parah at the very beginning. Why did they need Parshat Parah? Because people were Tameim, just like we see Pesach Sheni. When was Pesach Sheni? Pesach Sheni was not all the way at the end of the Torah. Pesach Sheni was right at the beginning when they built the Mishkan and they couldn't bring the Korbanot. So what does it mean these people were Tameimet? How do they know about Tameimet? Tameimet only comes up in Parshas Chukah. No, it only appears in the written Torah in Parshas Chukah because we want to connect it to Miriam's death and to the death of the people in the Midbar over the 40 years. But actually, in terms of communication, of course it was given earlier, just like the other parashiyot that they needed. Again, a very clear example of Ein Mukdam Amucha B'Torah, that even though you see something in Parashat Chukah, the Torah is not meant to be a diary. It's not meant to be a chronological, on this day this happened, and then the next day this happened. Why do I need to read a diary of what happened in the times of the Midbar? On the contrary, I need to know how it affects me, and therefore the Torah has to be read as not so much as a book of history, although of course it is historical, there are historical things that happen, but it's a book of literature, it's a shira. The Nitziv says that the Torah is put together as a shira, it calls itself a shira. It has to be read in a literary way. Of course, it's not just a book of literature, it's also a book of halakha, it's also a book of the history of the Jewish people, it's many things all rolled into one. But one thing it's not a journal. And we see that on many levels, through many examples. And here you see this Gemara that says that things that happened actually earlier are only recorded later. So too, the Abarbanel says, again on Parshas Sahar, number 11, Shemosh Rabbeinu Olav Shalom Kibel Mehar Sinai Kol HaMitzvahs Kladoseyim Pratoseyim Diktukeyim. We see this before, that Moshe got all the mitzvahs, Kamosh Zachar Chazal Batoris Konim. Ha'amnam, nevertheless, says the Abarbanel, Moshe lo limed liYisrael haMitzvot kulam. The Batachat. Moshe did not just give this all to the Jewish people. Asher Kablam Mimenu Yitbarach, when he received them from Hashem. Rather, he gave them to the Jewish people as they needed them, as events unfolded in the Midbar, and they needed to understand the Mitzvot. So, how were the Mitzvot communicated from Moshe to the Jewish people? The answer is, whenever they needed them, he received whatever he received, he gave over as they needed it. Yes? I think he's talking there in Achreimot, where we see the actual command to put the lights together, the menorah. It's not in Shemot, it happens later. Where does it come? Not in Bamidbar, not Bahalotcha. There is a parsha of the oil of the menorah. I think he means that one. I can't remember exactly. Now, the last question that we need to look at, which is also very interesting, is, so what about the writing of the Torah? Yeah.
In Mara they were given Shabbat and a few other dinim as well.
Yeah.
Even before Har Sinai.
Mm-hmm.
And how does it all fit in? I mean, if we look at a person who goes to Yeshiva, he spends 20 years learning Yeshiva, and he still hasn't got a clue of all the things.
Okay.
How did the people know what to do?
So they were given on an as-needs basis. And again, they didn't know what to do. They were given certain mitzvot, and certain mitzvot were held back. I'll give you an example. You raised the question of Shabbat and Marah. In Parshas Beshalach, Moshe Rabbeinu is given the mitzvot of Shabbat, including the idea that on Friday morning there will be double Marah. And yet he doesn't tell the people that, because when the people find the double man on Friday morning, they all run to him and say, what's this? What do you mean, what's this? God already told you that was going to be. It's clear that Moshe did not tell the Jewish people that was going to happen. Why? Because, again, he wants to withhold something from them so that will be an educational message. It's actually very interesting in Shabbat. Maybe the educational message is, I can't explain to you what Shabbat is. You need to come to Shabbat and experience it in order to understand what Shabbat is. You can spend all week long explaining to people who have never kept Shabbat what it's like to keep Shabbat. If you're wasting your breath, just get them to come to you for Shabbos, and then they'll have a much better idea. So it could be that. So again, did they understand everything? They didn't understand everything. They understood what they needed to understand, and over the years they learned more and more and more. We'll see that the Torah is... Is it true that the generation of the Midbar knew the entire Torah more than we did? Are you required to say that? Or did Torah evolve and unfold in terms of Torah Shabbat and Halakha over the course of the last 3,000 years? We'll see very clearly the Rambam's position when it comes to Torah Shabbat. Today we're only talking Torah Shabbat. The Rambam's position is no. The Sea of Halakha is an ever-increasing... I've got this poster at home, which everybody likes to look at, called the Sea of Halakha. You've seen that poster? It's a nice poster. It starts with Mount Sinai, and it has a little stream coming from it. And then by the end of it, by the time it hits the Gemara and the Rishonim, and then it's a Sea of Halakha. Yam halacha. And we'll see that actually is a very important point that you're raising, which is that the halacha is an expanding process, certainly in terms of Torah Shabbat Peh. And what we have today is far greater in many ways than what they had then. Now, it doesn't mean we're greater, but it may be we are dwarves standing on the shoulders of giants, which means that we, on an objective level, have more to say. But it's a very good point that you're making, but it's really a point of Torah Shabbat Peh. Because Torah Shabbat Peh is concrete and finite, and it is what it is. Well, it's not finite, it's infinite in its understandings, but we have from the beginning to the end. But we certainly don't have any more than they had then, but Torah Shabbat Peh, we'll see, we probably do. Now, have a look here in the last section, the last 13 minutes of the shiur. When was the written Torah given? So here there is much more clarity. And it says the following. The Yitzhak Moshe is the Torah Hazot, in number 12, Moshe wrote down the Torah, gave Vidnela el HaKohenim, gave it to the Kohenim, B'nei HaLevi, HaNoseh, it's Aaron, B'z Hashem, Bel Kol, Zikne Yisrael. He gave it over to the Levim, to the elders. The Atah, now, says the Pasuk, Kitzvu Lachem et HaShira Hazot, this is what I referred to before, write down this Shira, and there I mentioned that the Tziv brings out that the Torah calls itself a Shira, and there are reasons which I'm not getting into now. V'lamda et b'nei Yisrael, teach it to the b'nei Yisrael. V'sima b'fihem, put it in their mouth. L'man tiyeh li hashira hazot le'eib b'nei Yisrael. Now there are different ways of understanding. The Shira could be also hazinu, which I'm not getting into that now. It's a big machlokes there. When Moshe is finishing writing the Torah, al sefer, on a sefer, ad tumam, all the way to the end. And we'll see there is an interesting question about the last 8 psukim of the Torah, which we'll get to in a minute. Moshe then commands the Levim, Nosei Aaron Brit Hashem, Lemor, and says to them the following. Lakach es sefer ha-Torah hazeh. Now pick up and take this sefer, v'samtem oso mitzad Aaron Brit Hashem, put it next to the Brit Hashem, next to the in the Aaron, next to the Luchos, Elokeichem, v'hayasham, v'cha le'eid. And it will be a standard master copy from which you will copy all future Sifrei Torah. So in terms of the writing of the Torah, it seems very clear from the psukim that at the end of the 40 years, just before Moshe Rabbeinu died, he puts together a full set of Torah, he hands it to the people, and hands it to the Levim, and he says, this is now your Sefer Torah. Fine. What did he write? So look at the Ramban number 13, Vayichta Moshe Es HaTorah Hazot, Mitchilat Reshit, Ad Le'enei Kol Yisrael. From the very first word to the very last word of the Torah, he is obviously ruling that the last 8 psukim, maybe 12 psukim, were all written by Moshe Rabbeinu, which is a debate which we'll mention in a minute. But what about during the 40 years? Was any of it written? So have a look in number 14. Here is a second machloket, which goes, if you like, parallel with the first one we saw between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Here we have a machloket as to how the Torah was given. Says the Gemara like this. Amar Rabbi Yochanan and Mishum Rabbi Benon. Torah, Megillah, Megillah, Nitna. The Torah was given Megillah, Megillah. Have a look at briefly in 15 at how Rashi understands Megillah, Megillah. Kishinemra Parsha la Moshe, when Moshe was given a Parsha, he would write it down Well, the Besait Mem Shana, and at the end of the 40 years, Kishinigru, Kol HaParashas, when all of the parashas were finished, Chibram, he joined them together, Begidin, with sinews, Besafram, and he sewed it together. How do you make a Sefer Torah? You don't take one long parchment from beginning to end, you take Luchos, you take number of parchments, square parchments, and you write the parsha by parsha. You don't have to write it in order. Mezuzot and Tefillin have to be written in order, which is why they're relatively much more expensive, because every time the Sefer makes a mistake, most mistakes he has to just start all over again. A Sefer Torah doesn't have to be written in order. He can write whichever parchments he wants, and when he's finished the Sefer Torah, he sews it all together. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Fine. That's the first opinion. Megillah, in installments. Go back to 14. Rav Shimon ben Lakish at the end of the first line, Omer. No. Torah chatuma nitna. The Torah was given chatum. Chatuma. Meaning what? What's chatuma? Seal. Meaning in one go. Rashi says in number 15, Lo nichtava. It wasn't written at all, according to the Shita, ad soif mem, until the end of the 40 years. La'acha she'nemru kol ha'parshas, when all of the parshas were all said, kulan, v'ha'nemaru z'loi b'shana rishona b'shnia, and those which had been said earlier, Samosha Rabbeinu, by God, ha'yusadun lo al-peh, they were still Torah Shabbal peh, ad she'kalsam, until he wrote them down at the very end. Now this is very interesting. According to the first view, which is Megillah, so Moshe was writing things down, and presumably once they were written, and at the very end he's joining them together. According to the second view, nothing was written. It was only written at the very, very end, and therefore everything before the very end was still in the, if you like, in the gather of Torah Shabbat Al-Peh, until the end of the 40 years. What does that mean? Why do I need to know this? Again, let's ask. On the first Machlok, we saw there are very fundamental implications to Messianism and what we talked about with Shabbatai Tzvi. Here, why do I need to know this? Why are Chazal interested in telling me? Again, I do not believe it's a historical debate. They're just asking, you know, how was it written, this way or that way. On the contrary, they're saying, how do I read Chumash? Is the Chumash something that was evolving, if you like, Megillah, part by part, and each part is going off the rails? The rest, or is the whole thing one unit put together by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe at the end when he says to him, now write this in the following words, which means that everything can relate back to everything else. For example, I give you an example. In the Luchot there are some differences between the first Luchot or the first version that we see in the Torah, which is in Parashat Yitro, and the second one, which is in Parashat Beit Chana. There are a few differences. The most classic and well known is Zachor and Shomer. Okay? Zachor and Shomer. In the first Luchos it says Zachor, it's Yom HaShabbat, and in the second Luchos it says Shomer. I remember my son asked me when he was about 8 or 9, he turned around to me on Friday night once and said, Dad, he says, why does it say in the Chadoidi Shomer of a Zachor of a Dibur Echad? When in fact the Chazal doesn't say that. The Chazal says Zachor of a Shomer of a Dibur Echad. Why did he switch it around? So I looked down at my son and I said to him, look, I think it's like this. If you look at the first words of every line, you'll see that Rav Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz is trying to spell his name, and his name is not Zlomo, his name is Shlomo, and therefore he went, even though Chazal says Zachor of a Shomer, so he wrote Shomer of a Zachor. My son looked at me in disgust. That was a moment in which I realised that I sort of lost a little bit of credibility. Dad said, that's the best you can do. He switched it to spell his name. And I felt a bit sheepish at the time. I looked into it a bit more. And there are actually deeper Kabbalistic reasons which I frankly don't understand at all. But they do mention that one as well. So I didn't feel completely, fraud. But I felt a little bit vindicated. But Zachor of a Shomer. Now, let me ask you a question. What was on the actual Luchos? Zachor or Shomer? So you could say there were two sets, and therefore on one it was one, on the second it was the second. But the Ramban doesn't want to go for that. The Ramban says later on, in Beit Chanan, he says, it said Zachor. So what does it say? Zachor. So why in Devarim does it say Shomer? He says, because Shomer is a pirush on the word Zachor. The word Zachor means, in Torah Shabbal Peh, Shomer, to guard Shabbat, to keep Shabbat, to avoid doing Malacha on Shabbat, and therefore Sefer Dvarim, which crystallized into Sefer Dvarim, but which previously was, as we've seen, a Torah Shabbat Al-Peh through the 40 years, it preserves for us this level of Torah Shabbat Al-Peh in the text itself, which is really fascinating, because this goes to how do I read Sefer Dvarim, which is a very good question. What is Sefer Dvarim? And if you look in the classic Mefarshim, you'll see it's a kind of bridge between Torah Shebaal-Peh and Torah Shebichtav. There's a fascinating piece of Rashi.
Mishneh Torah.
What does that mean, Mishneh Torah? It's a repetition, or it's something of a perush. It's a commentary. The Rambam wrote the book called, he called the Mishneh Torah, because he says this is your guide to how to understand the Torah. So too, maybe Sefer Dvarim. And again, read this piece. I remember it's brought at the beginning of the Art Scroll commentary on Sefer Dvarim. They bring Rav Soloveitchik's piece there. He has a whole analysis of this. So again, whether the Torah was given Chatumah or Megillah Megillah has an impact on how I read it. Let me give you another example. Have a look for a second on over the page in number 17. Here's the pasuk in Sefer Beshalach, in Parshas Beshalach, and you read this and you think, okay, that's nice, and then you realize afterwards what's going on. Ubnei Yisrael aklu et haman, the Jewish people ate the man, arba'im shana, 40 years, ad boim el eretz nosheret, until they reached the land in which they settled, et haman aklu ad boim el tsei eretz kanaan. Now, what's strange about this pasuk? Tishma. Why are they talking about 40 years in the desert in Parashat Shemot? No one had an idea in Parashat Shemot that we're going to be 40 years in the desert. That only comes up in Shlach Lecha, which is right at the other side of the Mishnah. Why is this in Parashat Shemot? So, according to the Shita of Chatumah, then it's obvious. The Torah was not written in installments. It was given at the end and cross-refers back to itself in every way. When Moshe Rabbeinu is given the Torah at the end of the 40 years, and God says, now write these words down. So this is obviously an important point to put into Parsha Taman, because it cross-refers to what happens at the end, which has already happened to the Jewish people later on. This is a very important point, and you'll see in a minute the Chazon Ish, I'll refer you to this Chazon at the end, talks about this as well. Even in the version Megillah Megillah, the Ramban, which we skipped, is number 16, but I'll mention it to you, the Ramban says it doesn't mean installments, i.e. 100 installments. It means two installments. Installment number one was at Har Sinai, everything up until then, and installment number two was right at the very end. So even in Megillah Megillah, you still could understand, according to the Ramban, that this pasuk was part of the final redaction, if you like, of the Torah given by God to Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the 40 years. As far as the last 8 pesukim of the Torah are concerned, there is a major debate about this, which we're not going to be talking about further because we won't have time on this particular course. But there are two opinions brought in the Gemara. One of them is that the last 8 pesukim was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, through Nebuah, Bedema, through with tears, whatever that means, whether it means he wrote them physically using tears, which is one of the shitah, whether he wrote them in code, which is another shitah, whatever that means. And the other view is that they were written by Yehoshua afterwards. And the Yehoshua opinion, of course, opens up an entire new debate, which is, really? Is it true that there were psukim added to the Torah other than by Moshe Rabbeinu? And the Gemara says, according to that other shita, yes, by Yehoshua. Well, when did he write them? And if you start looking around in Mefarshim, you end up in this very interesting debate with the Ibn Ezra, which I'm certainly not getting into now, and frankly not planning to get into, which is the Ibn Ezra's slightly veiled comments as to what is the Sod HaYudbet and how that works, which, if you know what I'm talking about, good, and if you don't, then we'll talk about it another time. But that's thrown up by this whole debate at the very end as to the last 8 pesukim. But clearly the Ramban, and also the Rambam, looking at number 18, Maimonides says, Kol HaTorah Kasva Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe wrote the whole Torah, Koden Shi, almost before he died, Bitsav, Yadah, with his own handwriting, the Nasan Sefer, the Kol Shev, the Shev, the Sefer Echad, Nitham, the Aron's Day. He wrote the entire Torah from beginning to end. The last thing I would just refer you to, which I'm not going to read through because you can read it yourselves, it's there, I brought it in translation, is a very interesting piece from the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, in his halachic commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, all of a sudden in Kuf Kaf Hei, gets into an analysis of how the Torah was put together. All of the things that we've been talking about in this year, the Chazon Ish raises and talks about. Why does he suddenly start talking? It's in Hilchos Sefer, in Kriyas HaTorah. Because apparently he was learning at the time with somebody who was a professor of biblical criticism, who was coming to him with the documentary hypothesis and asking the Chazon Ish, well, how do we address the questions which are raised by the documentary hypothesis? And the Chazon Ish says, these questions are not new questions, these questions are discussed by our classic Mepharshim, by the sources, by Hazal, by the Rishonim, and he sets out an analysis of how you deal. Again, the questions that we've asked in this class, fundamental questions, questions that people often don't like asking, but there's no reason not to, because they're all dealt with clearly. Not that the answers are totally clear, they're not, but they are at least dealt with, which are, number one, when was Moshe given the Torah by Hashem? Number two, when did Moshe communicate it to the Jewish people? And number three, how was that Torah finally written down into the Torah that we have today? And the Chazon Ish felt that it was important in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch to include a discussion of these items. I recommend that you read it. I've also given you a link at the bottom of the page for those who are interested in further research on this. There are a number of wonderful shiurim online by one of my close rebbeim, Rav Meir Trivik, who lives in Harnov. He has a number of shiurim on this Chazon Ish and associated topics, which take us into an entire new level of understanding of the questions. Therefore, this is the first installment in what I hope will be a number of installments, and exactly how many it will be, we'll see as the time goes on.
We have
at least six or seven, and we may have a few more even.
We'll see where we are.
But hopefully, this will be the beginning of a voyage through the Sea of Halakha together, which will become hopefully a useful and enjoyable one. Thank you very much.
For next week, the class is going to be back in the main hall. There was a Mazel Tov party for Shira Smiles, and for those who were there, it was.